Just be yourself. It sounds like pretty simple, straightforward advice, but in practice, especially in 2025, it's a pretty hard thing to actually do. The pressure to conform, to blend into some larger group mentality, comes at you from every direction. Family, friends, social media, the industries we even work in, we start to feel like we must comply with whatever the world is asking of us if we want to be seen as successful. But even the need to be seen as successful is kind of arbitrary, right? I mean, most people don't even measure success in the same way. So why do we care so much about what others think? If we don't shake ourselves out of this trap, our creative selves, that part that actually makes art, eventually starts to die off. To be yourself is to follow your heart, to make the work you feel compelled to make, to travel where you want to go, to sit with your questions and chase down the answers on your own. To be yourself is to stand confidently in your own ideas and trust that you can carve out a path for yourself in this world. And today's guest, well, he really embodies that. I'm your host, Jacob Johnson, and this is the My Art is Real podcast, a narrative journey into the lives that shape art. Today's episode, episode 64, Bill Ellis, right after the break. You know, this podcast couldn't be done without you listening and sharing it with everyone you know. Thank you so much for that. If you enjoy the show and you want to help me continue making it, as I am the only person here behind My Art is Real, you can go ahead and go to myartisreal.com and purchase a limited edition art print that is made in studio by me in collaboration with previous guests and other art friends. That way you're supporting the artist, supporting the show, and collecting a limited edition print in the process. I'm also working on some new bonus stuff for Patreon, which I'll be announcing soon on emailing list and social media and stuff. So if you're interested in that, consider signing up for Patreon for $3 a month and supporting the show as well. You can also leave a review on Apple Podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and back to the episode.
So my name is Billy. People online know me as Bill Ellis, not Billie Eilish or any of that stuff. I existed before Billie Eilish came out, but thankfully for Google, I'll take some of the traffic anyway. And I'm a technically 3D artist, but I don't consider myself technical at all. So I just prefer to just be called an artist, because at the end of the day, a medium is just another piece of equipment.
Kind of early for a side note, but it fits. And I actually told Billy this too. The name My Art is Real, it's partly about this idea that some people still don't view certain mediums like digital art as real art, which if you know people like me and Billy, but if you know people like me and Billy, we think that's complete horseshit. Anyways, Billy grew up in Greece.
I grew up in Greece. I was very fortunate. I'm bilingual because my mom's from London, she's English, and my dad's from Greece. So I grew up in Greece and then quite a small town near Athens called Corinthos. If anyone's familiar with Bibles and stuff, St. Paul to the Corinthians, that town. Fun fact, apparently there's a church built in the center of Corinthos where St. Paul went to the ancient town of Corinth. And then everyone said, "You're chatting absolute shit." No one believed him. They said, "If your God is real, get in this barrel and roll down the mountain. And if you survive, we'll build the church." And apparently he survived. And then they build a giant cathedral. So that's a bit of history for you there. So that's where I come from.
And if you know anything about the history of modern religions, then you can probably guess Greece itself is a deeply religious place.
Greece is very, very religious. Not really, I wouldn't say by choice. It's just ingrained in the culture. So I grew up around Orthodox churches and stuff. I mean, personally, it was never forced on me by my parents or anything, because they don't really care as much. It's just you're surrounded by all this stuff. And then obviously ancient sculpture and the ancient Greeks and the mythology. So there's a lot of info there growing up of things that could become inspirations later in life.
And as a kid, he was obsessed with drawing.
For a period, I was obsessed with drawing military vehicles for some reason. It's very unfortunate that we can't find any of these anywhere, which is quite sad, because, I mean, as a teenager, I would have told my dad to just bin everything. But yeah, I was drawing a lot of, especially aircraft. I was obsessed with drawing military aircraft and like camouflaged aircraft and stuff like that. And then after that, I really got into Spider-Man, and I loved Spider-Man as a comic. And then that's what got me into just doodling stuff like that.
And of course, looking back, like all of us, he remembers these drawings as the best thing anyone had ever seen.
In my brain, you know, when you play, your memory of a very old video game is like, it's the best graphics in the world. Like, I still remember to this day that I was like a fucking incredible shit hot comic artist at the time. I'm pretty sure it's shit, but because we can't find it anywhere, it would just always live in my mind as I was like, yeah, I was amazing back then. But like, what sort of happened since? But yeah, that's what I was into early on. But I did remember one thing. My dad's cousin is a priest, like a monk in churches and stuff. But his specialty was Orthodox paintings. So I never painted with him, but I remember he was teaching classes, and I went once, and he was teaching how to paint the religious paintings you get in like Greece and Russia and all those Orthodox churches. And I was like, that's incredible.
And when you were growing up, were your parents always supportive of your creative ambitions?
There was a point when it was to the music stuff. I think with the art side of stuff, it wasn't necessarily so direct support. I was like, oh, this is amazing. Do what you want. It was more because Greece at the time wasn't the sort of wealthiest country. So the notion of someone becoming an artist as a way of living their life didn't seem like a good use, or it didn't seem profitable or anything like that. So I guess that it's trying to protect me of like, maybe you should learn a more tangible skill and everything. But it was never against what I wanted to do. He was trying to guide from his own experience in life.
Eventually, Billy started to dive into the graffiti culture. When exactly did the graffiti and everything start?
Teenage years, started smoking, bunking school, hanging out with the graffiti kids. When I was younger, before that, I was bullied quite a bit at school because at the time I was like, bilingual, and my mom was English, so like some of the traditions were a bit different. I might have had a slight accent with some words, so I guess I stood out a little bit. And then I sort of met these guys at school, and then one guy told me to another guy, and then they were in town skating, and then I think it was like the Teenage Rebellion made me want to hang out with these guys. They were skating, I can't skate for shit, but I always remember I liked sketching and doodling, and then I just saw what they were doing, and then I just started doing it myself.
He wasn't a natural at graffiti either. It took a lot of practice, but he was enjoying the hell out of it.
And with everything, I was shit to start with, but then we bombed some trains, we did some like old abandoned warehouses, and it was just fun to hang out all together and just almost like creatively connect, but also compete. Of like who's going to do a sicker piece. We never really tagged. We always wanted to actually draw big pieces and like put our creative mark into the city where we lived. With time, because it was part of the graffiti crew, the big guys that were like amazing started getting commissioned to do murals and stuff. And at the time, I would just go and hang out with them, even almost like, you know how you get like interns and runners, just to be in that aura and see them create. And I would just bring over boxes of like spray cans and bring coffees and shit. And then like one of the guys, he was called Spawn. I think he's a tattoo shop owner now in Athens. But he says, like, oh, do you want to do some lines here? So he like showed me his ways and stuff. And then since then is that sort of sense of creative camaraderie that really inspired me to just keep doing that.
So was this like your first real group of friends? The first time you felt like a tight bond with a group of people?
Yeah, because it felt like it was a true community, because no one cared what you really looked like or what you did. It was more about just hanging out and sharing ideas and creating, because what connected us was creativity. As even though it's not like your standard way of creating, and at the time a little bit illegal, because some of the things we did were illegal, but there was almost like a sense of connection because we were the bandits in our town. And like it was cool as well, because people knew like, oh, you're hanging out with this crew and you're doing this. And then like you get mate guys talking to you, he's like, oh, you did that piece 2 days ago, and then I saw your mural on this wall. So It was very cool.
And how did it feel to finally find a place where you fit in after struggling for that for so long?
It just felt freeing and almost like healing in a sense, because being bullied younger in my early days, I thought there was something wrong with me. But it was just that sense of like, just because you don't necessarily fit directly in society doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. And it was just a sense of gaining power of, no, you can be whoever you want to be in life. And this is, mind you, still we're talking like 15, 16 year old. So that was a key point in life. But the funny thing is, after that, like, I stopped painting because these guys went off and did stuff. And then I stopped. We all kind of drifted apart just in normal ways that life does. And I just started working in a factory. So like, creativity almost took a big halt later in life, and up until I came to this country to study, which reignited everything again.
And during all those years, were you keeping up with school? Were you being a good student?
I was an amazing student until puberty hit, and then obviously romantic outlooks started opening up, and then I lost loads of weight because I started smoking and drinking coffee and stuff. So it all sort of came together. I was like a grade A student before that, but that's when I was getting bullied. And then with the graffiti and the art and cigarettes and coffee and losing weight and start hanging out with graffiti kids and like girls that hang out with skaters and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, the grades went down, but I still knew. I hate putting effort into things that I don't enjoy. And that's a big problem I have with the education system, which like, why the fuck do I need to know ancient Greek? It's a dead language. No one uses it. I don't care about it. Fine. Like historians and Latin and all that stuff. I don't give a shit. I'd rather spend my time learning computer sciences or art or topics that interest me. So that was my sort of attitude when I hit puberty.
Art, music, drawing, graffiti, all of it was fun. It gave him a way to express himself. But at the same time, none of it felt like something that could actually become a career.
It was definitely a way of expressing myself, but I never thought, especially at the time, a wild or stream, especially being in Greece, that it would ever be my life. And I think that was just because Corinthos is a very small town with very small-minded people that just end up doing the same thing, which is either working in a restaurant or a cafe or a car mechanics or a factory. The ones that stay in that town, that's what happens. Some of them leave, might go to Athens. A lot of them will eventually come back. But I knew deep down from the age of like 12 that I'm going to move to the UK, because that's where my mom's from. My parents are together, obviously, and they love the UK. But for me, for the future of me as a person, and I didn't even know I was a creative at the time, I was like, I want to go somewhere else and just explore the other part of who I am, because I'm not just Billy the Greek. I'm also Billy that has influences from England and the UK and that sort of stuff.
Most of us grow up dreaming about moving away from our hometowns and about finding our own path, about seeing what's out there beyond the place we've known our entire lives. Billy was ready for that. He wanted to move on and to see what else was waiting for him out in the world. It's funny that, you know, you grew up in Greece and I grew up here in America in a small town in the South. But I saw a very similar thing of, it's a small town. Everyone's doing the same thing. Like, most people never leave and they end up doing the same thing their parents did. And I didn't want to be stuck in that. Did you feel that way? Like, I just can't be stuck here from an early age? So as you were growing up, what were you thinking? I know you were thinking, I need to move to the UK or something, but what were you thinking was you wanted to be in your life? What were you thinking for a career or for school or anything like that?
That's the thing. I had no clue. I mean, I was working in my uncle's factory because they just did like sockets and cables for electric protection and stuff like that. But that was just a way of getting some pocket money. And then when the idea of coming to the UK to study, again, no clue what I'm going to study at this point. But I'm very good at setting very big goals that are necessarily might not be achievable in the next year or two, but I hyper-focus on a big goal. And my goal was, I'm going to go and study in the UK and I'm going to live in the UK. So that was my goal, because I just didn't see anything else for myself in Greece, just besides my family and stuff. So then I just started working in my uncle's factory for a year solid, saved every single, well, drachma or euro at the time, just so I could be able to fund myself when I came to this country. I applied for 3 universities. 2 rejected me because I didn't have the grades. And then the Plymouth University accepted me. And then that was it. I was just, my parents helped me. And then we all packed up, came here. And then I went to uni.
Once you arrived in the UK, finally out of Greece, stepping into the world as an adult, how did that feel?
I think the freedom was incredible, because for the first time, it's like early notions of adulthood. And I think it was a bit harder for me, but also made me grow up a bit quicker, because I lived in Greece. In the UK, we've got a system of university loans where you get 1 university loan which pays for your actual university course. And there's another loan called the maintenance loan, which is the loan that helps you pay for like day-to-day costs and rent and housing and stuff. But because I lived in Greece, I couldn't get the maintenance loan. So I had to get a part-time job. And I was very fortunate because my Greek grandma helped me a bit of the rent for the first year. But I think that notion of, I'm here now, I've saved enough money from working myself, I got a bit of assistance for the first year, and then I'm just going to get a job. And then working, it got to a point where I was working full-time and doing university, taught me a lot about independence and sort of spending for myself, not because people gave up on me, just because of a financial situation. It was incredible for an 18-year-old to learn how to handle and work and have true determination and aspirations to just keep going for this until I succeed.
Then he started to attend his university classes.
The funny thing is, at uni, the course I studied was multimedia design and technology, but it was all based around coding and like circuit boards and like actual physical tech stuff, like electronics and stuff like that. And 1 month in, I realized I'm so shit at this and I'm not enjoying this.
Luckily, there was another course that sparked his interest.
And there was a sister course called Digital Art and Technology called IDAT, which at the time was like weird stuff like ActionScript and Flash and After Effects and a bit of 3D and then like Arduino kits and all that stuff. But it just seemed exciting. So I managed to move myself onto that course. And then I guess the rest is kind of history, because on that course, again, I realized I'm shit at code. I'm not going to enjoy code. But we were free from all the tutors to just, they're like, just learn whatever you want. You want to learn 3D. You want to learn trap code, particle systems. Learn whatever you want to do under the umbrella of digital art, as long as it has a story to tell. And I think that's what I remember as the most valuable lesson from that university course was, it doesn't matter what you use, as long as you've got a story to tell, it can be anything in the creative world.
As long as you have a story to tell. I really love what Billy said here. I think that we take stories for granted sometimes. We don't realize how valuable they really are, or how big of a role they play in every part of our lives. For thousands of years, humans have used stories to communicate, to pass down ideas, to make sense of this chaotic world. Growing up, stories from books and movies gave me somewhere to escape to when the world around me felt like it didn't fit. And now I've found my own way of telling stories, by helping share the stories of artists who create worlds for others to belong in too. Billy definitely had stories he wanted to tell, but he needed to find the right medium. First it was drawing, then graffiti. Then he started experimenting with digital tools. And that's when things really started to take off. Back in Greece, you talked about the idea of being an artist just wasn't a thing. Do you remember when that perception started to shift for you?
It started shifting when I started learning about some of the artists that had graduated from my university. And at the time, it was the early days of
This is way before Instagram and Behance and all that stuff. There used to be these art forums where there were private art forums of artists. One was called Depthcore, and the other one's called Slash 3 and Evoke 1. And there were places where digital artists would just congregate and then just share ideas and make stuff. And then they would come up with collections and releases all together, not necessarily for sale, but just put a show together. And that's when I saw people like Pete Harrison, Mike Harrison, Justin Muller, who was one of the creator of Depthcore. And all these cool digital artists were things I'd never seen before, because DeviantArt was the thing at the time. So I started exploring the internet as well and what creators were doing around the world. And I was like, how the hell have you done that? And then I would learn about people doing stuff in Photoshop and then 3ds Max and Blender and After Effects and just using all these different tools and plugins and stuff, but like not in a linear way, just mashing things up to create what they wanted to create. And then that was incredible. I'm like, oh, there's more people around the world, and necessarily they haven't been university educated. They're just creating for the fun of it. I'm like, so more people exist like this.
That discovery that there was a place for the kind of art he was making, it was liberating. It made him realize he could actually do something with this for real.
Yeah, because I wanted to be like them. And a goal at the time was I wanted to be in computer arts magazine, Photoshop magazine, and digital arts magazine. So I just started photo bashing stuff together. But I liked 3D a bit. So I was just mashing 3D with Photoshop and blending everything together. And then just posting online. And I think it was quite amazing for the first time in my life, really, besides uni and stuff. And obviously, like, parent support when you're a kid drawing is like love and stuff. But seeing people that have no clue who I am actually liking what I'm making. And it was just that level, that positive affirmation was just explosive in the sense like, oh, this is cool. People like this shit. And I'm enjoying making it. I would stay up to like 4 or 5 a.m. just because I was deep in the zone making stuff.
The state of being completely consumed by a creative pursuit, putting everything you have into it, it's incredible. You start to feel like maybe this crazy idea of becoming an artist for a living isn't so crazy after all. And somehow, you gain the confidence to keep going. So, as you were getting ready to graduate, what was the plan for the future? What were you thinking?
In all honesty, I had no clue what I was going to do when I was graduating, because I was working full-time nightclubs, cabarets, and bars. So I honestly thought at the time that I was just going to end up being a manager of a bar or something. That's not what I wanted, but my brain at the time was saying, well, because what I was doing wasn't necessarily graphic design, which is what everyone used. Like, oh, you're a web designer, you're a graphic designer, you do branding. What we were doing was quite odd per se at the time. So I didn't necessarily think, again, there was a career for this, but I just loved doing it.
Not trying to make work just for the sake of getting a job, but making it because he genuinely loved it, meant that when Billy did finally land a job, it would be because of his unique voice. And man, he landed a huge gig, all from posting his work on DeviantArt, which, if you've listened to this show for a while, you've probably heard it mentioned before. It was a big website where artists would share their works before Instagram really blew up.
I was very lucky. I got my first commercial gig with Formula One and Team Red Bull. And at that time, I thought that was it. Like, my career's made. I'm going to be booked for months ahead and everything. Did that campaign, and it was incredible. But I'm 21 years old, and then as an idiot, I get paid the entire job, and then we decide to rent a really nice apartment with my mates. Started buying PlayStation, got computer gear, which was actually smart because I got a big graphics tablet, better PC and stuff. But the money almost disappeared. I'm like, but it's going to be fine because I just worked for Formula One and Red Bull. I'm going to get hired by fucking everyone. Fucking no one hired me for a year. And then I didn't know about taxes and stuff. So then I owed £6,000 to HMRC, which is the tax people in this country. And then I had debt collectors knocking on my door. This was after graduation. So I was realistically kind of deep in the shit.
Talk about high highs and low lows, and right out of uni too. But Billy didn't just give up. He got to work figuring out a way out of this hole he had fallen into.
And then I just started looking online for like design jobs and stuff. And no one was replying to emails because my portfolio was not your standard design portfolio. And there was one job in Brighton for a 3D designer to work on TV commercials. But the commercials were quite wild because they were like Clubland 2000 record album or like this is what I call Ibiza 4000. But like the visuals were just mental. And it was just everything from like liquid paint to crazy crystals and big type and stuff. So I went above and beyond for a week. I created an entire pitch deck. I basically picked clients from their website and did imaginary TV campaigns for it, all 3D done by me. And I sent it in. And then they said, well, do you want to come up and meet us? I met them. And then I was the new 3D designer. So I literally moved my entire life from Plymouth to Brighton in 4 days. And then that was the beginning when I realized that non-standard sort of graphic work exists as a career. Or I don't know if it evolved enough at the time, but that was my first sort of understanding of, oh, wait, this can be a career now.
And when you got that big gig and later that job, how did that change the way you felt about the work you were doing?
Yeah, it felt recognition. It just felt incredible. It just solidified that I'm not delusional. Like what I'm making is cool. And like it's people enjoy seeing what I'm creating.
And what exactly did your art look like back then? Was it anything like what, you know, we're seeing from you now?
Nothing like it. It was very colorful. It was a mixture of 3D fun typography, crazy abstract elements. You could argue that it's almost like 3D graffiti with weird neon shapes. And yeah, I mean, you can Google Bilelis DeviantArt. I never took it down just so I can remember it and go back and look at it. There's some mental shit on that.
Billy started working as a full-time artist. Sure, he was making client work, but he still got to express himself, and he was getting paid to do it. So tell me, what was the first job like?
It was amazing, and it was amazing as well because the studio was quite small, so there was only like 4 members of staff, including me, and then we grew to like 15 plus. But it almost felt like a startup, and I was like the go-to 3D guy. This is not tooting my own horn, but they had a 3D guy already that I'd worked with them for a long time, getting paid a lot of money and stuff, and it was like freelance basis, so I never met the guy in the studio. One day, the creative director was not necessarily happy with his visuals, and I said, like, just let me have a go. And then my 3D knowledge at the time was way higher in the sense of, like, he's an older guy, so he's coming with like older techniques, and then I was using different software and cinema and like different looks and stuff. What I created was bang on what the client wanted. So as bad as it is, eventually like that person's role phased out, and then I got promoted as like the head of 3D, which then I started finding artists online through places like DeviantArt and Behance. One of my favorite 3D artists ever is called Luca Viola, and he's a freelancer now. He works in Houdini and stuff. At the time, he just had one project on Behance of some 3D exploded Italian Vespas with squiggly shapes coming out of it. I'm like, hire him. He's amazing. But they're like, his CV, he was a full-time barista. So he never studied 3D, never went to uni or anything, and he was working as a barista. I said, I don't care, hire him. And he came in, and then within a couple of years, he was the head CGI artist of the studio, and he now works with some of the biggest 3D studios in the world, and he lives in Spain. He's my favorite story arc of someone that you might not have the education or anything, but like just that little bit of magic in your art can be explosive. So yeah, and then I became an art director, and then we went all the way up to the ranks, and then we had a great studio all working together, making really cool stuff.
And when he went home, he kept creating purely for the fun of it, the stuff that wasn't for anyone else.
It was amazing, but there was always a part of me that felt that it's for someone else. That's why I made sure I always created my own art that I wanted to do when I was at home. Again, as many late nights, I would just make the stuff that truly brought me into the position that I'm in now. And not necessarily for commercial reasons, because I had a job, so I didn't have to have clients at this point. I was just doing it because, again, that sense of community online and what brought me to this place was what I was doing. So
the job was amazing. It was great, but I always felt a bit like, this is wicked, but something is missing. And it's not necessarily 100% me and who I want to be. But again, at the time, they're just like, I just brushed it off as like niggling doubts and like self-doubt about stuff and like the grass is greener and all that sort of stuff.
If you've never seen Billy's work, go to his website or socials. I'll make sure I have all the links in the description. Once you see it, I'm pretty sure you'll recognize it from somewhere. He's done some major collaborations over the years. His work is built from 3D renders, but the texture, the lighting, the insane detail, it looks like you could reach out and touch it. You can imagine what it would feel like. It's dark and it's bright all at the same time with layers upon layers of meaning. And when did you first start doing the style that you work with today?
I remember this very clearly. I was bored one day and I was in the studio and I had to do a texture test for something. I think it was a food campaign. So then I made a texture out of cabbage, a texture out of honey, and a texture of ice cream. But then I didn't like how it looked on your typical 3D sphere. So I put it on a 3D skull. And then part of it was like, I could just make more of these. And then I made more. I made a skull made out of ham, a skull made out of omelette, and just weird shit like that. And I'm like, okay, this is cool. But then what if it was a bit more artistic in a sense of like, it has a story? Because I remember back to my uni days, like, you can do whatever you want, but like, give it a story. And I think a few weeks later, I went to a museum and I saw an exhibition on textures and patterns. At the time, I didn't know that's what inspired it, but I just started creating like geometric patterns, textures and patterns inspired by history and traditional clothing and motifs. Like, what if you found a scarf from ancient Greece decorated, a scarf from Egypt decorated, a scarf from Japan decorated? And then I just couldn't stop making these, and I made like 50 of them. And then I put them all together, black and gold, on a photo grid, and there was 50 perfect, or these scarves on a grid with all individual textures on them, but they all felt part of one story altogether. And then I put that online. I put it on Instagram and Behance and DeviantArt, and then that exploded. It got featured in places like Board Panda, 9gag, and everyone hated it, which is fine. All these sort of other places. And then the recognition was amazing. And then somehow I've been contacted by an art gallery to do a print release with these, which we did. And then that's the first beginning of like, oh, wait, like, this is truly sort of what I wanted to create, aside from everyone else's expectations, just for the fun of it. But like, I've put a story into this. So that was the first time I remember doing that. And that was a long time ago.
Eventually, he started getting attention from galleries, showing his personal work, selling pieces, putting himself out there.
It kept growing. So we started with that project, and then I started doing more stuff in my style. And then I got repped by an art gallery that no longer exists because, I mean, I left that gallery because the treatment was horrendous. It goes back to what you said about people not considering digital art as art. So I remember going into the gallery with orders from customers from that gallery. And then I was looked at as like, who are you? And I'm like, I'm on your roster. And it was always like everything we created at the time had to have screen printing and effect, like loads of other paper effects on top to almost justify the fact that you're buying a print. Like, the notion of buying a print from a digital artist felt alien to them. It didn't feel like valuable. So we had to do all these extra things on top. I mean, they looked amazing because they had gold foils and glosses and stuff. But it wasn't because they wanted the paper stock and the final print to look amazing. It was because they wanted to almost add a sales point that was like, oh no, hands have touched this, therefore it has worth.
Digital artists have always struggled to be seen as real artists. Things have shifted a lot, and the art world is slowly coming around, but it's still an uphill battle, which feels completely unfair considering digital art is probably the most consumed form of art in the world today. But there have always been people who genuinely accept it, and Billy's work found its way to those people. While he was building his personal art career, a client reached out directly after seeing his work. Billy ended up bringing the project into his day job and doing it through the studio. Things didn't exactly go the way they should have.
I left when that unnamed campaign happened for the, yeah, where I realized I just felt a bit mistreated in a sense. Well, the job came to me under contract. You said I'll work for you, so I'm going to do it through your studio, even though I did all the work. And then you're going to get all the money for the campaign where I've done all the work, including weekends. That just felt off to me. And then also just woke me up to the fact that I could have done this job by myself and I wouldn't have to answer to anyone but the client. So that was within a few weeks of that completing, I handed in my notice.
So what was the move after that?
At the time, a friend of mine was living in Scotland, and again, we met online, never met the dude. He was running a branding studio, but they were doing cool stuff like murals in restaurants and everything. And then I just ended up doing a bunch of statue renders for him and like mashing up statues with panthers and like Karl Lagerfeld with a mohawk, and just almost like punk takes on sculpture and fashion and stuff. And then we did an entire restaurant here in Edinburgh together. And then he just looked at me while we were doing this and he goes, why don't you just move here? Because like you want a fresh start. And he's like, we could do stuff together. We can share the studio. I'd be like, yeah.
And overall, it was a nice fresh start for him.
At the time, yeah, I got brought up because of an ex. And I didn't have much say per se in the decision. But I'm kind of grateful I got made to move up here, because then I had no ties to the previous job or anything, and then I was completely free to just do my thing. But I was fortunate because at the time I also had some freelance clients, like did a lot of book covers and stuff like that. And this was before the days of when I did the video game campaigns and the Lionsgate Hollywood stuff and Ozzy Osbourne and Apache the musician. This was before all that stuff. But I think that move and having the freedom to work here by myself opened it up, because I was just doing the art I wanted to create, and then people were resonating with around the world, and that sort of opened so many avenues.
When you first started freelancing, was it stressful not having that steady paycheck that you could rely on anymore?
It was stressful, but I was quite sensible in the sense like I'd saved up for salaries and stuff and a couple of freelance gigs. Enough money in the bank to support myself for like 6 months. And I told myself, I'm like, you got 6 months to find even just one client. And it doesn't have to be a client. You can sell 3D assets or prints. That sense of, well, you got a deadline, so come up with something. And then I would online network, join agent reps. And then at the same time, I was creating prints because I had a large, well, not as big as this day and age, but I had a social media following and stuff. So I was just trying every avenue possible. And not just for the money, but just to see, like throw stuff in the wall, see what sticks sort of thing. Because no one teaches you this stuff. You create stuff because you think people are going to like it, and then some shit fails, some goes well. So, but again, I was free to just try stuff.
Throwing all of your ideas at the wall to see what sticks. I love that approach. And honestly, it's kind of the only real approach any of us have. So when you sit down to create something, do you start with a story in mind? Or does the story appear as you're working? Or what does that process look like for you?
There's always an overarching theme, which I didn't know till 5 years ago. For me, what moves me and what inspires me to keep creating is to beautify things that scare me. Whether it's, well, the sense of death in itself is such a harrowing experience. And everything I create has elements of death into it. But for me personally, it's a coping mechanism about things I fear the most.
He was using art to understand himself and understand the world.
Which is losing loved ones and time passing and lost memories and all those sort of things that I personally fear. I try and beautify it in the sense of finding a way to cope with it and seeing the beauty that exists in these elements. Because if you can almost see it as a bit like dark comedy, and comedy in general is like, it comes from a place of trauma and a way of coping with things that are terrifying in life. So if you can laugh through it, then you're invincible. If you can see beauty through it, then I feel I'm personally way better equipped to deal with the bad shit that happens in life. I mean, that's what I try to find in everything I do.
And the religious imagery in your work. Is that intentional?
I never really planned it. It just started coming out. And I would even see it as a sense of like rebelling against everything I grew up around in with the religious stuff, but also respecting it because I'm not religious, but I can see beauty in the iconography and some of the stories in all religions and like some of the temples. And yeah, you could argue this grandeur that exists in temples is a political system to keep people subdued to this religion for authoritarian reasons. But I can't help but feel moved by the creativity that has inspired humanity through religion. Forgetting the bad shit about religion, there's some incredible art around the world, whether it's architecture, sculpture, painting, that's been going for hundreds and thousands of years, purely stemming from religion. So I think what inspires me is the output that humans have created, whether that, you can argue, whether that is divine intervention or whether it's human expression through the belief systems. I find that result of religious belief incredibly inspiring.
Looking at how far you've come and how your work has evolved, how do you feel about where you are now?
Yeah, I'm very fortunate about my career so far. I'm very grateful. I think it's more on me of where to go forward. I think there's elements of fear of rejection, self-rejection or failure. But I think it's just coming to grips with a sense of, like, I'm 37 years old now, and I talk about it like I'm old, but I'm not. But it's just realizing that, like, I can just reinvent it, not necessarily for what everyone else has to see, but for me, so I can keep creating in a way that fulfills me. And like, I love the stuff I've really enjoyed this week, going back to my roots and creating like a sort of black stone sort of artwork in 3D. And that's been loads of fun. And that's just been me revisiting old artworks and just playing again. None of it is directly for sale or anything like that. It's, again, for the play aspect of it. And realizing that social media doesn't mean anything and numbers don't mean shit. It's like, at the end of the day, it's like, if you like what you're doing, that's what's key. It's hard. And like, I'm very fortunate because I grew up without social media and stuff. It's quite hard for younger artists and creators out there because you almost have like everything's connected to like shares and reshares and stuff like that. So, I mean, the funniest thing is some of my favorite artwork ever is the one that's done performed the worst on social media. So I just got to remind myself that is like, once I've enjoyed the whole process and I'm vibing, and I'm like high as fuck on creativity, that's what truly matters. And that's why I like to create some stuff just for me that no one gets to see, just to keep me sane and in the game.
Billy continues to put out incredible works constantly, but he creates for himself first. Not every piece needs to be seen, but sometimes it's just about expressing those feelings and getting that energy out. That's how you know Billy is a true artist. It's not about the medium or the money or the attention. It's about telling his stories in a way that feels authentic to who he is. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the podcast. I know it took extra long. Honestly, I don't know what happened. It feels like these last couple weeks have been a blur. We've been real busy with my wife taking her master's and all kinds of family things going on. So I appreciate you sticking with me, waiting it out for this episode. I'm gonna try to get a jump on the next one. We'll see how that goes with all the holidays coming up. I hope everyone has a good holiday season. Everyone gets to spend time with the ones they love. And thank you so much for spending any amount of time to listen to this show, especially if you made it to the end. It means the world to me. Thank you so much. And I'll see you in the next one.